Learning Lab at WEAA 88.9 FM on the campus of Morgan State University, the School of Global Journalism and Communication presents the Morgan News Hour. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Randy Reed, News Director here at WEAA.
I'm Demi Goff, co-host of the Morgan News Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan reacts to the latest developments out of Afghanistan as the Taliban takes over the capital of Kabul.
Howard County Executive Calvin Ball announces a new safe and sound project for Ellicott City.
The death toll in Haiti continues to rise after a powerful earthquake shook the island on Saturday. The death toll from Haiti's powerful 7.2 magnitude earthquake has risen to over 1,200 as rescuers scramble to retrieve those stuck under rubble ahead of an approaching storm. Earthquakes have wreaked havoc on Haiti since at least the 18th century, when the city of Port-au-Prince was destroyed twice in 19 years. Saturday's powerful quake killed hundreds and injured thousands more. Haiti sits near the intersection of two tectonic plates that make up the Earth's crust. Earthquakes can occur when those plates move against each other and create friction. Haiti is also densely populated. Plus, many of the buildings are designed to withstand hurricanes, not earthquakes. Those buildings can survive winds, but are vulnerable to collapse when the ground shakes. AP correspondent Karen Chamas has the latest from Haiti.
The death toll from Haiti's powerful 7.2 magnitude earthquake has risen to over 1,200 as rescuers scramble to retrieve those stuck under the rubble ahead of an approaching storm. Workers tore through rubble of collapsed buildings with heavy machinery, shovels and picks. Their work is even more urgent as experts are predicting heavy rain, landslides and flooding upon the imminent arrival of Tropical Depression Grace. Officials said more than 7,000 homes were destroyed and nearly 5,000 damaged from the quake. Hospitals, schools, offices and churches were also affected. Like many others, local Augusta Maslin has been sleeping on the soccer field. Our house is destroyed, the earth cut, the water is brought to us, we can't drink the water, and some have resigned themselves to drinking the undrinkable water because people have to drink. I'm Karen Chamas.
Naomi Osaka is pledging her prize money to the Haitian relief efforts. Osaka's dad is from Haiti.
The Taliban is on the move in Afghanistan, taking over the capital of Kabul. The images coming out of Afghanistan are a lot to take in. You see Afghan residents clinging onto military planes departing down the runway. President Biden addressed the nation this afternoon.
We went to Afghanistan almost 20 years ago with clear goals. Get those who attacked us on September 11, 2001, and make sure Al-Qaeda could not use Afghanistan as a base from which to attack us again. We did that. Today, the terrorist threat has metastasized well beyond Afghanistan. Al-Shabaab in Somalia, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Al-Nusra in Syria, ISIS attempting to create a caliphate in Syria and Iraq, and establishing affiliates in multiple countries in Africa and Asia. These threats warrant our attention and our resources. We conduct effective counterterrorism missions against terrorist groups in multiple countries where we don't have permanent military presence. If necessary, we'll do the same in Afghanistan. We've developed counterterrorism over-the-horizon capability that will allow us to keep our eyes firmly fixed on the direct threats to the United States in the region and act quickly and decisively if needed. We plan for every contingency, but I always promise the American people that I will be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. If anything, the developments of the past week reinforced that ending U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan now was the right decision. American troops cannot and should not be fighting in a war and dying in a war that Afghan forces are not willing to fight for themselves.
The Taliban has seized power in Afghanistan 2 weeks after the U.S. was set to complete its troop withdrawal after a costly two-decade war. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan announced the state is committed to resettling more Afghan interpreters who have contributed to U.S. efforts in Afghanistan. The state expects to receive at least 180 more Afghan nationals through Operation Allies Refuge.
During their five-year reign before being ousted in 2001, the Taliban used a harsh interpretation of Islamic law, sharply limiting women's rights, banning music, cutting the hands off thieves. The insurgents have tried to present themselves now as a more moderate force, but many Afghans don't trust them and fear their rule will again be violent and oppressive. The U.S. and NATO allies spent billions training and equipping the Afghans, but the Kabul government was rife with corruption, and troops in the field often lacked ammunition, supplies, or even food. Once it became clear U.S. troops were leaving, morale plummeted, and many units surrendered to the Taliban without resistance. The U.S. says the Afghans ultimately decided they would not fight. A defense official says General Frank McKenzie, who runs U.S. Central Command, talked with militant leaders in Qatar yesterday, urging the Taliban not to interfere with the evacuation. The official says the Taliban agreed to establish a mechanism that'll allow the evacuation to continue, after McKenzie told them the U.S. military would respond forcefully to defend the airport if needed.
And here's Governor Hogan reiterating his support for Afghan refugees.
The chaotic and heartbreaking scenes out of Afghanistan over the last several days, with innocent civilians running for their lives in fear of the Taliban, is a result of a rushed and irresponsible withdrawal. Many of these Afghan citizens, our allies, bravely risked their lives to provide invaluable support for many years to our efforts as interpreters and support staff, and we have a moral obligation to help them. For their service, these allies, their immediate families, are eligible to receive special immigrant visas to the United States. Maryland already expects to receive at least 180 Afghan citizens as part of Operation Allies Refuge. And we stand ready and willing to do even more. It's the least we can do. If you're in need of assistance or know someone who is, contact our Office of Refugees and Asylees immediately. I ask all Marylanders to continue to pray for the safety of every American and all of our allies who remain in harm's way.
Shifting gears, Maryland continues to see an increase in the positive coronavirus cases. As of Monday, the Maryland Department of Health reported 766 new cases. 576 people are now hospitalized, with 30 new patients having been admitted in the last 24 hours. Five more COVID-related deaths have been reported, and the state's positivity rate is 4.65%.
Let's take a look at your regional wrap.
Maryland prosecutors have charged a Northern Virginia man with animal cruelty after the discovery of a suspected dogfighting arena earlier this year. WTOP-FM reports that the St. Mary's County State's Attorney's Office charged Damian Terrell Wilson of Woodbridge, Virginia, with 47 counts of animal cruelty last week. St. Mary's County Sheriff's deputies got a tip about a suspected dogfighting arena on a power line cut-through in February and found evidence of dogfighting at that location. Investigators found paraphernalia tied to dogfighting and 11 dogs, but officials say three dogs were euthanized when behavioral evaluations determined that rehabilitation would be too dangerous. Wilson is scheduled to appear in court next month. Maryland State Police say three people were killed during a weekend head-on collision between two cars. A police news release says it happened Saturday night on Maryland Route 140 in Carroll County when a Chevrolet Camaro traveling eastbound over 100 miles per hour struck a Toyota Corolla heading westbound as the Camaro's driver began passing a vehicle. The three were pronounced dead at the scene. Camaro's driver was identified by police as 53-year-old Todd Baker of Westminster, and the Toyota's driver was 20-year-old Anna Marie Leinhard of Westminster. The road was closed for 4 hours. And the city of Annapolis gave honors this weekend to the late author Alex Haley and his extended family on his 100th birthday. The family of the writer of Roots received keys to the city of Annapolis on Saturday. Haley completed genealogical research that led him to discover he was a descendant of Kunta Kinte, who was enslaved and sold at the city dock in Annapolis. Roots was turned into a groundbreaking television series. Haley was born 100 years ago on August 11th. He died in 1992. Mayor Gavin Buckley says Haley's ties to Annapolis are rooted in telling the most barbaric chapter of the American story. I'm Carol Williams for the Morgan News Hour.
Let's take a look at your weather for this evening. Tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 a.m. Cloudy with a low around 73, chance of rain 60%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tuesday, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm before noon, mostly cloudy with a high near 86, chance of rain 60%. Tuesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly after 3 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 73. Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 87. Chance of rain is 60%. Wednesday night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, low around 73. Chance of rain is 80%.
The Baltimore City Council plans to introduce a new resolution to support those facing eviction. You're listening to the Morgan News Hour here on WEAA 88.9 FM. We'll be back. On WEAA 88.9 FM, Howard County Executive Calvin Ball announced the groundbreaking of the critical Ellicott City Safe and Sound Flood Mitigation Project today, groundbreaking the crucial H7 dry flood mitigation pond with the focus on residents to reduce flood waters and maintain the historic elegance of Ellicott City. The mitigation project is expected to be finished in 18 months.
Our goal, since adopting Ellicott City Safe and Sound Plan, is to keep our residents safe, reduce the amount of flood water in historic Ellicott City, and preserve the historic nature of our town. The retention projects are designed to hold water away from historic Ellicott City and release it slowly once the danger has passed. The conveyance projects are designed to ensure water that is not retained is conveyed to the river as safely as possible. Once complete, it will provide approximately 13 acre feet of storage, which is about the same as 10 football fields, each covered with 1 foot of water. This pond will reduce the amount of water that runs off the site by more than 30% in a 100-year storm, keeping more water from flowing to historic Ellicott City during a severe weather event.
Roughly 4,500 families in Maryland face evictions as the moratorium ended on Sunday. A three-judge panel with the U.S. Court of Appeals and the District of Columbia is expected to rule this week on whether the moratorium against evictions imposed by the CDC will stand. The court late Saturday set an expedited schedule following an appeal by Alabama and Georgia realtors of the Friday ruling. The judge refused landlords' request to put the Biden administration's new eviction moratorium on hold, though she ruled that the freeze is illegal. In issuing her ruling, she said her hands are tied. by the appellate's decision from the last time the courts considered the eviction moratorium in the spring. Tonight at Baltimore City Council meeting, a resolution was adopted to request calling on Governor Hogan and state leaders to extend the eviction moratorium and to require landlords to work with tenants to apply for rental assistance prior to filing eviction.
Help is coming in from around the world for Haiti after Saturday's earthquake. American Urban Radio Network's Ebony McMorris reports.
I'm Ebony McMorris. About 2,800 people are injured and almost 1,300 dead. This following a 7.2 earthquake that hit Haiti on Saturday. Help is coming in from all over, bringing in medical supplies, helicopters, and rescue task force teams to help find survivors. Now, the situation could worsen as a storm moves in, bringing in heavy rain, flooding, and possible landslides. The new prime minister, Ariel Henry, has declared a one-month state of emergency for the whole country, who's already been reeling from increased gang violence after the assassination of President Jovenel Moise. And Haiti still hasn't fully recovered from a 2010 earthquake that killed a quarter of a million people and a 2016 Hurricane Matthew that killed more than 900 people. For AURN News, I'm Ebony McMorris.
The Morgan News Hour caught up with organizers of this week's AmFram event. It's the 44th year, and student reporter Kara Williams has more.
I am joined today by Tierra Brown, who is one of the organizers of AmFram. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Can you tell us what AmFram is, and because it's hybrid, what can people expect?
So, yeah, the AmFram Festival has been around for over 44 years. It's our celebration of African-American history and culture. You know, as we all know, that Baltimore has a longstanding history of Black culture and excellence, and this is kind of our time to highlight that. So this year we have a hybrid festival, which is unlike our traditional years, which is a two-day festival here in Druid Hill Park. But this year, due to COVID and all that kind of comes with it, we've spread out the festival experience over an entire week. So we've got some virtual and some in-person events. And the first of our in-person events actually kicks off tonight at 6 p.m. in Druid Hill Park. That's the AmFram Gallery Walk. And you can expect live performances, live activations, art pieces, vendors, lots of food, kids' activities. Tuesday, we have a AmFram Movie Night, so that's in Herring Run Park. That's also starting at 6 p.m. That's a double feature with A Wrinkle in Time playing first. In the middle of the first and second feature, we'll have a panel discussion with some local Black filmmakers, and then we'll close out with One Night in Miami. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Wednesday, we have the AmFram Bike Party. That's here in Druid Hill Park again at 6 p.m. Thursday, we have AmFram El Fresco. We'll be heading over to Middle Branch Park, and that's from 3 p.m. to 10. We've got some really great artists. We've got DJ Mighty Mark, Navasha Dea. We also have Mesa will be singing. Then Friday, we'll head over to Pennsylvania Avenue at Shake and Bake for a skate night for two sessions, one for families, the earlier session beginning at 5, and the one for the 18 and over crew beginning at 7 and going until 10. Then we'll close out the festival with our concerts. Those will be virtual on Saturday and Sunday. And on Saturday, our lineup is Busta Rhymes, Wale, and Mooski. And on Sunday, our lineup is Chaka Khan, Marsha Ambrosius, and Smokey Norful.
So for a little bit of history, I do remember the very first AmFram that was down the harbor before it was in the harbor. Can you tell me or tell us how the AmFram started?
The AmFram really started off as the Festival of Nations many years ago, and I think it kind of took on different lives after that each year. You know, kind of highlighting local vendors, makers. There were always two performances, and it's kind of traveled around the city. Actually, tonight at our AFRAM gallery walk, we've captured about 44 years of AFRAM history in some archival images. So I encourage everyone to come out and to kind of actually visually see the progression of AFRAM's history over the last few decades.
So AFRAM is supposed to be moving to Juneteenth weekend next year. Can you tell us about that and why the switch?
So I think, the desire was to really just have a citywide observation of Juneteenth, one kind of culminating city event, and that was really the reason for the shift to Juneteenth. We're excited to kind of highlight Juneteenth. It just kind of felt like a relevant tie-in, and we're looking forward to it.
Okay. So the restaurant week, AFRAM Restaurant Week, will there be any specials from that, from restaurants?
Yeah, so there's a ton of specials. There's over 20. So we worked with over 20 locally owned black restaurants, and you can find the full list at AFRAMBaltimore.com. And AFRAM Restaurant Week is new this year. So we've got lots of different treats. Each restaurant has worked to create an AFRAM-themed dish. So you've got everything from fried catfish and jalapeno cornbread to buffalo shrimp to mini funnel cakes. So, and the restaurants are all over the city. So, just hop over to AFRAMBaltimore.com and find a restaurant that's near you.
Great. That sounds good. So is there anything else you want to tell us about AFRAM Week?
Just to, to come out, to show up, show out. We hope that everybody really just, takes a moment to visit us wherever you like in the city. You can head over, I said, to AFRAMBaltimore.com is the best place to get all of the information. Our virtual components can be seen on AFRAMBaltimore.com and also through Charm TV on TV 25. So we'll be airing lots of special content all week, but those Saturday and Sunday will be our main performances. So we've got something for everybody, and we hope to see everyone out there.
Thank you very much. This is Tierra Brown, one of the organizers of AFRAM. Thank you for joining us on the Morgan News Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Sounds like a great event. To learn more about the event, go to AFRAMBaltimore.com. Now stay with us here on the Morgan News Hour. We'll be right back. Take a look at your weather for this evening. Tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 a.m. Cloudy with a low around 73, chance of rain 60%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tuesday, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm before noon, mostly cloudy with a high near 86, chance of rain 60%. Tuesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 3 a.m., mostly cloudy, with a low around 73. Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 p.m., mostly cloudy, with a high near 87. Chance of rain is 60%. Wednesday night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, low around 73. Chance of rain is 80%. Now from our campus newspaper, The Spokesman, student reporter Taylor Jones writes about the freshman move-in. Morgan State University's largest freshman class moved into the residence halls on and off campus Saturday. As we told you last week, Morgan's demand for housing is higher than ever before. Due to the increase in student enrollment, the Office of Residence Life and Housing received 3,100 applications with only 2,600 guaranteed spaces in university housing. Morgan received the highest number of housing applications ever. Living off campus freshman year is uncommon for Morgan students, but one freshman's father believes it will introduce their student to adulthood. As the freshman class winds down from their move-in and partake in upcoming freshman week, the upperclassmen will prepare for their own move-in next week. Sophomores and juniors and seniors will move into their housing assignments August 21st and 22nd, ahead of the first day of classes, August 23rd. Read the full story at our campus newspaper, The Spokesman, at msuspokesman.com.
So do you guys remember your freshman move-in day?
So I did not stay on campus because I only lived around the corner, like 15 minutes away from the school. And I had to come to Morgan for access orientation. And I feel like I was here for at least a week. Mm-hmm. So that move-in was just already too much. I had to bring, like, a comforter and some sheets. Whoa. And, you know, I had to bring everything. Like, you know, it's like outside of my house. Mm. So it was a lot to deal with. But then it was fun, the experience of living in the dorm rooms for access orientation, like everyone being, you know, in the same area, and you get to talk to or connect with the girls who are your age. Right. You know, so I thought that was like a really great experience. I remember one time it was the night before our last day, and we like ordered Chinese and watched a movie in the lounge. It was really fun, but when I thought about it, I was like, I don't know if I really want to stay on campus because I live so close in a way. 15 minutes away, a 15-minute drive to me wasn't that bad just to come to Morgan. So I was just like, you know, leave the rooms for, you know, the kids that are out of town who actually need them.
Mm-hmm. Dre.
All right. So the only time I stayed on campus was when I did, well, they called it pre-college, but now it's called CASA. Mm-hmm. And my freshman move actually wasn't too bad. Having that experience here on campus, it was very fun. I stayed at O'Connell Hall, and anybody who's ever stayed at OC, you have some stories. but honestly, it was very fun. I do wish that I would have been able to stay on campus as much as I was on Morgan's campus. Mm-hmm. And like Demi, I lived close by, but I just never just really in my head thought, I was like, all right, I'm going to stay on campus. Then I would back out at like the last minute. And it was nothing personal. It was just, I was just like, well, I'm from here. I can just commute. Mm-hmm. Like Demi, I was like, give it to somebody who's out of state.
Yeah. And then I thought about it. I was just like, I think it's too late to apply for housing. So, you know, that was also going through my mind. Like, I don't think I can apply for housing anymore. So it was already because we had access orientation. And then 2 weeks later, you know, everybody's moving in. So I was like, I don't think I qualify. Yeah. So it was just like, well, like you
it's
know.
Possible. They just put you on like the backlist.
Yeah, exactly. The backlist. I would have still been waiting to find housing when I'm like, I have a house.
Where did you stay at, by the way?
For access orientation, we were in Blount.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was cool. Like, in the room that I had, like, was overlooking the little corridor. So we could see everything. So it was pretty cool.
Good experience.
Nice experience. Each night here on the Morgan News Hour, we'll look back and bring you highlights of our afternoon shows. Today with Dr. K and Two-Way Talk. So in case you missed it, here's clips of both shows.
If you're not going to vaccinate, wear a mask. If you're not going to wear a mask, get vaccinated. But if you're not going to do either, right, stay in the house and just be, you know, and continue to isolate. Because if you're not going to do either of the two things necessary to keep yourself from being a danger to yourself or somewhere else, that's kind of irresponsible on your part. And when people decide they're not going to want to be around you because you're not doing either of those things, then you can't get mad. You got to make a choice.
It's interesting, Denise, because I think a lot about this, because I have nieces and nephews who can't get vaccinated. I mean, my sons are 18, 20. They have bodily autonomy. You know, they've chosen to go in the direction of getting vaccinated. But I have nieces and nephews who don't have a voice in this in this particular fight, right? They can do whatever is available to them, or they can do whatever their parents give them the space to do. Because I do know, you know, some 15 and 16-year-olds who could get vaccinated, but their parents are against it.
Right.
Because they're, and, you know, for a variety of reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous, too, because, you know, you may not, you may be against the virus, or you may be against, you know, getting vaccinated. And that is your, that's your right.
I've shared on this station that he gave me so that I could speak in, at his church. He gave me my very first robe, and I still have that beautiful black robe. Any final words you want to give us in tribute to Bishop Miles?
You know, I just reflect on a black man that was so intellectually gifted, that had such a strong swagger, sense of humor, but just loved people. I think about, you know, just how he cared about after school programming. So many things that we can go on and on and on about Anthony. But I do believe that the folks here today have a responsibility to continue to tell that story, to continue to pass it along to the next generation. But most importantly, that we live up to that legacy.
Senator, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that you're my state senator. I am so extraordinarily proud of the leadership that you bring the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland. Keep doing the great work that you're doing.
I appreciate you, my friend. And it's great to see you, Kara. Great to hear you, Kara. And just look forward to joining the show many more times.
Be sure to tune into our afternoon lineup at their new times beginning at 2 p.m. for Today with Dr. K and 4 p.m. for Two-Way Talk.
The inaugural jazz series, Jazz on the Narrows, ended on Sunday. It was presented by Muddy Waters' daughter, Mercy Morganfield. The show highlighted artists from all across the country, and the infusion of different cultures into the music was the vibe at the venue. We caught up with Mercy to talk to her about the importance of the festival.
I'm Carol Williams for WEAA, here at Kent Island Yacht Club for Muddy's Daughter Presents Jazz on the Narrows. I caught up with Mercy Morganfield and asked her, what did this jazz series mean to her?
Well, you know, it means so much, and I'm so pleased with how it turned out. My dad said blues had a baby and they named it rock and roll, but blues had a lot of children, and jazz was actually its first child. And it's so wonderful to be able to introduce this music to this community. We're going to do the same thing with blues. We're going to do the same thing with so many of the other American root music.
With all the turmoil in the country, Mercy shared with us why it was important to have a diverse crowd.
So, you know, this area, people will say, oh, wow, it's very segregated. Oh, wow, you know, Kent Island is very white. But it's really not. Kent Island has a very rich African-American history. And when you look at music is a universal language, and it transcends politics, race, gender, and so much of the foolishness that separates us. If we could get people together to just agree on music, you're halfway there. So I felt so good looking at the diversity of the crowd, looking at how everybody's loving us, how everybody's getting along, because that's the energy that music brings to the table.
I wonder if I ask her real nicely, will she come back every year?
This is a community where they listen to a lot of country, they listen to a lot of Jimmy Buffett. They didn't even know they liked jazz until this weekend, and I have everybody walking up to me saying, oh my God, I didn't know I liked jazz. I love this so much. So the community is embracing this event. I feel like we're definitely going to plan on having it again every year.
So thank you, Miss Mercy, for having me here. And it's an honor to be with you.
Thank you, Kara. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to interview me and for actually coming out and supporting this event.
You're most welcome. I'll be here next year.
Okay, thanks, Kara.
Well, I knew I was having a great time, but what did the crowd think?
So just give me your name and tell me how you're liking the jazz festival so far.
I'm Brad Geyer from Carroll County. Love it. It's great. Everybody's great music.
And I would like you to give me your name and tell me how you're liking this event.
My name is Marlene, and I am loving it. It's very, music is relaxing. We've only heard so far the one group, but it's awesome. Plus the view and the water. Can't beat that for Sunday afternoon.
Do you think you'll come back if you have it next year?
Of course. Definitely. It's definitely.
Well, that's all for now. This is Carol Williams for WEAA, 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. See you next year at Jazz on the Narrows.
Your sports and entertainment up next. You're listening to the Morgan News Hour on WEAA.
Take a look at your weather for this evening. Tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 a.m. Cloudy with a low around 73, chance of rain 60%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half an inch possible. Tuesday, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm before noon, mostly cloudy with a high near 86, chance of rain 60%. Tuesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly after 3 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 73. Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 87. Chance of rain is 60%. Wednesday night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, low around 73. Chance of rain is 80%.
Now let's recap some of our top stories tonight from the Morgan News Hour. We got an update on the earthquake that rocked Haiti over the weekend. It's claimed over 1,200 lives so far. President Biden spoke to the country this afternoon about the crisis in Afghanistan and what the U.S. plans to do. We also spoke with an organizer from AFRAM and discussed some of the in-person and virtual events planned for the week. Be sure to download our WEAA app and take us with you 24 hours a day. And now over to Andre for our live sports report.
Hey, what's going on? I appreciate y'all for inviting me as always. This past weekend, the Ravens continued their preseason streak on 18 straight preseason games winning, where they beat the Saints 17-14. And I actually had the privilege of being there. So the city really came out. There was a lot of people there.
How was the atmosphere?
The city is ready for some football. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens, at least defensively, looked really, really good. Some of the backups, they look pretty good too. But I can tell this is going to be a special season for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. As many turnovers as they were able to have against the Saints. Yeah. They also, speaking of football, the Atlanta Falcons is believed to be the first fully vaccinated team in the NFL, 100%. So
good for them.
We'll see if the rest of the teams can get in line with them. And then also, Jay-Z and the 76ers owner bid for a New York sports bidding for New York sports betting. They have a company that they're trying to organize for online sports betting in New York from Fantastic Sports Booking, released by the New York State Gaming Association. So this is something to keep an eye out for. Hopefully they can get it done prior to the Super Bowl in 2022.
If it's going to bring in revenue for New York State, they'll do it.
Look, money talks, right? Right,
it's true.
And my last story is Pro Football Focus judged the 5 rookies taken in the first round this past weekend. Mac Jones took the top spot at 82. Zach Wilson followed behind at 78.8. Justin Fields, 64.2. Trevor Lawrence at 58.5. And Trey Lance came in last at 49.5.
Trevor Lawrence, he's playing Jacksonville?
Yeah, he plays for Jacksonville. They're saying that some of the rookies didn't have that good of a showing outside of really Mac Jones and Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. To me, out of the caliber of quarterbacks taken from this first round, I thought Justin Fields actually looked the best, mm-hmm. and he looks to me like he's really ready. I thought Mac Jones looked pretty good, too. But to me, Justin Fields, he should start, but I understand why they kind of want to keep him on right. the bench just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But to me, the most pro-ready, like I said, and this isn't even just being biased. It was just looking at who played this past weekend was Trevor Lawrence. And definitely Trey Lance needs more time because Trey Lance went 5-14. So, I mean, he did okay, but you can just see that he wasn't ready. You can see that the difference between him and some of the other quarterbacks.
Right. I was, I happened to be home in upstate New York, and the Jets and Giants were playing.
How did you feel about Zach Wilson?
I thought he did pretty well. They beat the Giants, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran into one of my
old... I'm a Giants fan, so...
You are right. I ran into one of my old classmates from Archbishop Curley, and he was telling me, I'm like, Justin Fields, he's this. Mm-hmm. He was like, watch out for Zach Wilson. And I was like, I'm not sold yet, right. But we'll see what happens. Right. It's a long season.
If he
season.
Can survive the New York media, he'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ask Sam Darnold how that went.
Right.
All right. And that was my sports report. Now on to entertainment with my girl, Demi.
Thank you, Dre. So here's what's trending in your entertainment. The grandson of legendary boxer Muhammad Ali, Nico Ali Walsh, made his professional boxing debut Saturday night. The middleweight fighter knocked out Jordan Weeks in the first round of their fight at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Tulsa in Catoosa, Oklahoma. In a caption on Instagram, the 21-year-old noted that he brought his grandfather into the ring by wearing his shorts for the first and final time as a professional fighter, saying the legacy continues. Major concert promoter AEG Presents announced that all Coachella and Stagecoach music festival goers will be required to show proof of vaccination prior to attending live shows. This after Roc Nation announced that all Made in America festival attendees must be vaccinated or provide a negative COVID-19 test taken within 48 hours of the outdoor concert in Philadelphia. In addition, all ticket holders will be required to wear a mask. This is in accordance with Philadelphia City officials mandating masks at all non-seated outdoor events with more than 1,000 attendees. Now, LeVar Burton may get the chance to host a show after all. Oscar-nominated filmmaker Ava DuVernay tweeted out that she'll try to create the right show for LeVar Burton to host and make it an international hit. Burton replied to the tweet a few hours later, telling DuVernay to check her DMs. So as you know, Burton was among several candidates in the running to host Jeopardy after the death of Alex Trebek. There isn't any word if this is actually happening, but it seems as if something may be cooking up.
I hope so.
I was like, what do you think?
I'm a big LeVar Burton fan. I think he should have received the hosting gig.
Yeah. Or even, what do you think about these Roc Nation and AEG Presents saying that that ticket holders need to be show their proof of vaccination before they go to these concerts.
Right. I don't trust people. The cards are going to be fake. Right. You can get the cards, anywhere.
Exactly. You know? So I feel a little iffy about that. Like, myself, I was like, oh, I want, should I go to Made in America or, you know, COVID? Mm-hmm. But now they're putting out these guidelines, you know, you have to be vaccinated. And I'm just like, I don't know if I really trust being in a crowd of people just yet. I feel like I'm safe being in a line of people. Mm-hmm. But if everybody is all in one space, like you're looking at the stage, you're trying to see the artist, like that's pretty scary right now since we still are in a pandemic. My thing is, why are concerts coming back? Like, just relax.
Right.
Just cancel.
I have tickets
it.
For Earth, Wind, and Fire. I don't think we're going to be able to go in September. I personally think everything's going to shut down again.
Yeah, exactly. And Made in America, Megan Thee Stallion is going to be there. I wanted to see her, but then I'm just like, oh, I've seen Megan before there was a pandemic, so I think I'm okay. But then at the same time, it's just like...
You want people breathing on you?
I know. I don't want people breathing on me. I understand they say you have to wear a mask, but it's just like, no, I don't want to. It makes me nervous.
Are we going to gloss over the Muhammad Ali grandson?
Muhammad Ali's grandson. But, oh my gosh, amazing. He's 21 years old, middleweight champ, basically. His first fight as a mm-hmm. professional boxer coming out the gate. And it's a TKO.
Right.
Like, wow. Mm-hmm. And he also wore his grandfather's shorts. So, you know, that is just... amazing. I want to say amazing energy. Like maybe his grandfather was in the ring with them. Like, you know what? Like, it's not even going to be a full fight.
Right.
Just do it. And then also I read in the story that his godfather was there at the fight. His godfather is Flavor Flav.
Yeah, boy.
So I thought that was like this is such an interesting story. Yeah, great, like story. Very interesting dynamic. But I think that's awesome. 21 years old, TKO your first fight. And, you know, like, just, you know, keep going. Like, what is it? Rumble, young man, rumble?
I want to know how Flavor Flav got involved. I know he's a godfather. Right.
I know, right? I need some backstory right. behind this one.
Right. I mean, you know, I guess you could say they all run in the same circle, right. maybe because they're entertainers. But, yeah, it's very interesting.
All right. We want to thank you guys for joining us tonight here on the Morgan News Hour. I'm Randy Reed, news director here at WEAA.
And I'm Demi Goff, co-host of the Morgan News Hour. Up next is In the Groove with Lolo. Good night.
Our production tonight was brought to you by the students in the School of Global Journalism and Communication right here at Morgan State University, in our learning lab here in the studios of WEAA 88.9 FM. Led by Dean Jacqueline Jones and station manager Robert Shahid, thank you to our student reporters, Devontae Berry, Jasmine Johnson, Kendra Pugh, Marquise Ramirez, Kara Williams, and extra special thanks to Andre Melton for operating the board tonight.